Again, you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody, and this is on KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and we're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info, and my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien. Hello, Katie.
Hi.
and we've got two special guests this evening, because we're going to get into a little bit, a continuation of the subjects we started with last week, but we're trying to get a little bit more in depth on and seeking some of the truth here on and what is going on in this UFO community. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And our guests this evening are Larry Bryant and Jeff Peckman. And Larry, let's see here. Aha, I got it. Larry is a resident of Alexandria, Virginia, focuses on his research and writing efforts on national security affairs, including information access matters and First Amendment jurisprudence. If you Googleize his name, even were you to write it as Larry W. Bryant, you'll find enough background information to satisfy almost anyone's curiosity about his activities, associations, and achievements. Note, as far as he knows, as of this writing, Larry, your name is yet to end up on the national no-fly list. And Jeff Peckman is, 1998, ran for the U.S. Senate, and he's a columnist on UFO matters for the Denver-based issue of the national internet publication Examiner.com. Well, this is another old one, Larry, of Jeff. So I'm going to let you guys kind of describe anything you want to answer to your bio here. Sometimes when I'm trying to do five things at once, I don't get the chance to look over the information like I'd like to. So how about you starting, Larry? Did I lose you?
yes, I'm happy to be here and certainly happy to hear that Jeff Peckman is still making headway and headlines with his project out there in Denver. You know, I'm pretty far away from Denver, but I'm close to that project and have been for 2 years as one of his number one cheerleaders. And so Jeff can certainly talk about the project right now if you like.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Larry. You're more than the head cheerleader. You're the whole marching band. Larry is really a great hero anyway, but especially for this ballot initiative in Denver to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission. It's officially called Initiative 300. It is on the ballot and for the November 2nd election for Denver voters. And we've had an interesting 2.5 years to get to this point. But the first thing I'd like to mention, which is news that I'm just now sharing, is that I had a meeting today with a woman. And she's the first big, important endorser for Initiative 300. Her name is Veronica Barella. And she was described by the Denver Post as Denver's West Side power broker. She's primarily responsible for the redevelopment of Santa Fe Drive, the arts district, the low-income housing. She's really a political force in Denver. And to have her on board makes a huge difference in the credibility, the respectability of the campaign. And just today, we were talking for about an hour in her office, and she invited me. I'll get back to the ballot initiative, but this is just such exciting news. In addition to her endorsement, is that her organization, NewsEd, N-E-W-S-E-D, they also sponsor the large Cinco de Mayo celebration each year in the Civic Center in the heart of Denver, and have been doing that for many, many years. That same organization also sponsors the annual Civil Rights Awards in Denver. And this will be held this year, October 28th, in the Grand Ballroom at the Denver Center for Performing Arts. And the main award for civil rights is going to be given to a man named Wes Studi. Now, many people might know him as Native American, an actor. He's been in a number of movies. But most recently, and perhaps most famously, his voice and face were used for the character of the tribal chief of the Na'vi clan, the Na'vi tribe, on this planet of Pandora in the movie Avatar. So I've been invited to this event and as a guest, and I'll be meeting the tribal chief of this extraterrestrial race that everybody knows now. And I thought, you know, that is so perfect to have that occur during this campaign to create this commission that would gather the evidence of extraterrestrial visitors to our planet and to share that with the public by way of the putting that evidence on the Denver City Government website. And then to also try to assess what the risks and the benefits are of interacting with extraterrestrial races, people from other planets, if you will, because there may be even unintentional risks, biological contamination that we're not really ready for to deal with. And also this commission will try to help people, direct them to services that they might be in need of if they have questions about this, if they've had some contact experience, maybe they need hypnotic regression or just somebody to talk to that's experienced in these issues to understand what might have happened to them or what they saw, who they met that was, you know, was very unusual. And so this is in Denver. This is really a starting point. I would say it's a very historic effort to be the first official body really on the planet that is known to the public, that is going to engage the public and share information with the public about this reality that we are being visited by people from elsewhere.
Jeff, why did you pick now to bring about this initiative?
Well, I actually picked 2 years ago.
Okay.
And, I did not expect to have the flood of requests for interviews with the news media and talk shows at the time that I first turned in the draft of this ballot initiative, the first step in getting it onto the ballot. And that took up so much of the petitioning time that we just couldn't make it on the ballot in the spring of 2008. And so it was done again in the autumn, and at that time the city attorney mentioned that if it was on the ballot the following spring, it would probably be the only thing on the ballot, not even any candidates or bond issues or anything else, and the city would have to hold an election and spend over $500,000 just to have this one initiative on the ballot. Well, that wasn't very favorable circumstances. So, and also at the time, candidate Obama was moving quite quickly in the direction of being elected as president, and there were a number of people on his staff close to his campaign and would be in his administration that were very favorable and had gone on record in public advocating for the disclosure of the government's UFO files, whatever they know. So that was not a very good time. So after it was clear that nothing really new was coming out of this administration in terms of transparency and openness on this issue, it just seemed time to get the job done. And so we organized and got it done, and with the great support of Larry Bryant, it happened. I think it would not have happened without his support. So he was really the key to all of this. And now we are on the ballot. It was certified last November to go on the next election. It was almost on the primary election in August. But besides the cost, you know, the primary is mostly for the Democrats and Republicans to, you know, select their candidates. So by agreement between us and the election office, it was put on the November ballot, which is it's probably the best of all the possible times that it could be. Many things have happened since then. Leslie Keene's book just came out. Other books have come out. There's just more momentum. There's this NBC show called The Event that everybody thinks might be, a story of the U.S. president disclosing information about extraterrestrial visitors. And so a lot, you know, it really does seem now the perfect time, even though we had a couple starts and the ordinance itself was refined this third time to be something much more appealing to the voters and much more beneficial to the community if this passes. So it just worked out well in every way.
Larry, what made you want to jump on board his cause?
Well, when I first heard about this, I was astounded because some years before that period, there was an effort in St. Louis, Missouri, to have a ballot initiative to declare year 2000 as the year of UFO awareness. The people there didn't have the infrastructure to collect thousands and thousands of signatures needed to put that initiative on the ballot. So that particular avenue of public awareness fizzled left me panting for more because, you know, with that effort there, it signified a tremendous grassroots effort to shift the paradigm of what the government has control of with regard to UFO research and UFO reality as vis-a-vis what the people themselves can take a hand in changing. So when the project in Denver surfaced, I said, I've got to support this thing either with moral support or financial support or everything else I can put in the bucket here to keep this project headed in the right direction. And thankfully, I did have some casual funds that I tossed over to Denver to help get some of those signatures. And what you have now is the ballot initiative that will hopefully appeal to at least 51% of the registered voters who go to the polls on November 2nd, 2010 to make a decision. Do we want this commission or do we not? And this is the grand way of American electioneering. And I'm very proud to have some role in this. And as Jeff says, everybody can be engaged in this project. If they live in Mongolia, they can still give moral support to it. We even have an online petition for anybody on the planet to sign in support of the initiative. So we're making waves here in history and technical efforts to use the marketing techniques that have been developed over years by the internet use. So it's a great time to be ufologically alive.
How do the parties take to this? Is any of them getting a hold of this and helping support it?
The political parties?
Yes.
So far, it's a little early in the campaign season for this ballot initiative to be able to assess their response. But I can promise you one thing, having Veronica Barella and her friends, she actually went to a Democratic Party Latino initiative meeting, and she said everybody there was excited about this. She told another woman who's also very well known, very powerful politically, and just known in the community. That was a friend of hers, and her friend said, "Well, it's about time," just like that. And so people are jumping on board in that subgroup, and I think that will expand to the larger party when they see that this very significant, politically powerful group of Latinos in Denver, I think I've heard recently that they could be as much as 35% to 37% of the voters in Denver. Now their champions are saying, yes, we should support Initiative 300. So that's huge. And when that happens, you can be sure that the news media and the people running for office and the incumbents in office, they're not going to be, you know, ridiculing this issue and this ballot initiative in a way that they might have done more of otherwise. So that in itself is huge, and we'll see just what the effect is from that. But some of these people that have been elected to city council, they owe their jobs to the work of Veronica Barella and her group. So, you know, they're going to be a lot, I think, more cautious in what they say, whether they give outright endorsements, I don't know. But I'm glad that Larry mentioned this online petition, because without that, I would not have noticed Veronica Barella putting her name of support and support to this ballot initiative. I look at that, the people that sign up, because it's nice to see people signing up from Hong Kong and Japan and South America and Indonesia and all around the United States. And people are watching this around the world. And so I just happened upon her name and I recognized it. And I thought, oh my goodness, is that her? Because of all the people that you'd want on your side with something like this, she's got to be in the top five in all of Denver.
Now, is this
so that's a huge thing.
Now, Jeff, is this just going to be in Denver, or is it around the state?
This is strictly a proposed ordinance for the city of Denver.
Okay. And what do you expect to accomplish by this?
Two things. The first being the opportunity to get a lot of truth about this issue in front of people when we know they're paying attention. And we know they're paying more attention because they're going to have to vote on it. And voters, when there's something in front of them, whether it's a candidate or a ballot initiative or a referendum, they do pay more attention. They make some effort, some good faith effort, to know what they're voting on, because they're taking on that role of either getting somebody into office that could affect their lives or passing an initiative which could affect their lives in other ways. And so they want to be responsible. They rise to the occasion. It's a little bit like putting somebody on a jury trial who hears both sides of the issue and then has to make a decision that could be life or death for somebody, or could, you know, increase or decrease justice itself. So they become more responsible, more attentive, more discerning. So getting all this information in front of them is the most important thing. I would say even more than winning the election, because elections get won all the time, especially candidate elections. Nobody learns anything new. You know, they just know that their person won or lost. And so this information that we're presenting, we're doing this through an 8-page newspaper that you can read right now at extracampaign.org, where you can also sign this online petition. You go to the voter education page, and there are links to online articles corresponding to each page of this newspaper, but also there's PDF files for each page. And probably by the middle of next week, we will have printed 10,000 of these newsprint newspapers, 8 full pages, 11 inches by 17 inches, like almost like a regular newspaper size. And we'll distribute those around to different events. So getting the information in front of people, encouraging students in colleges and high schools to hold mock debates so that they dig deep into the issue, or even as their homework. And then that would be enough of a reason to do this. But if the commission, the ordinance passes, and I feel much more confident now that we have this support from the Latino community, then this commission will have 7 regular volunteer members. They will, you know, put the evidence that they can collect on the website, government website. They'll help people understand what this is about. They'll become a resource. They'll basically do, as a citizens task force, what the federal government should have started doing 60 years ago.
How do you feel like it's getting taken seriously enough? I mean, some of the videos that I've seen, they kind of do your interview a little bit in jest, but there really is a serious issue behind this, correct?
There certainly is, and Larry can comment on more of the history of this, because I am somewhat new to this topic. I've only been doing this for about 3 years, and before that I watched the movies and the television shows, but I was not engaged as an activist or as an advocate for disclosure. But they definitely, I saw an evolution of the media coverage go from quite, you know, ridiculing and making fun of it to very serious, because you would start to see these television, the websites for the TV and radio shows, or you'd see in hard copy newspapers, they would take a poll. They would survey their readers, their viewers, and they would ask, do you believe that we're being visited by extraterrestrial beings? Do you believe that your town should have an extraterrestrial affairs commission? Do you believe the government's covering this up? And consistently, the percentages were 60, 70, 80% saying, yes, these UFOs are real. Yes, we're being visited. Yes, the government's covering up. You know, yes, we should have an extraterrestrial affairs commission in our town. So those figures reflecting the interests of the viewers, of the audience, of the news media, they're not going to ridicule them as well and insult them. So I saw a very rapid evolution of respect from the news media during the spring of 2008. And now that they see, they know that 10,000 people have signed this petition to help get it on the ballot, that's extremely significant because they know that that represents even a much bigger percentage of the population. So the real news coverage has not started quite yet, and I'm glad for that because there have been some preparations that we needed to do with this newspaper and some other things. But I think within a week, sometime this week, I'll send out a press release about Veronica Borella's support, and that's going to wake a lot of people up. Then they'll know that she's very effective and can get things done just on her own, and that can just snowball. And soon we'll just have an avalanche of support. And then the whole news media will definitely be taking it much more seriously and having more in-depth discussion, debates, and that sort of thing.
By the way, you know, you mentioned the Latino community. Another geographic or geopolitical aspect of this is the vote of young people. Young people are more amenable to seeing beyond the local horizon. They have visionary appreciation for what this project can mean. And with young people now having a hook on this subject matter, they can get to the polls and actually bring off this amazing project to its realization, because they, you know, there's a lot of young people who aren't voting on as a rule, but if it captures their imagination enough, they're going to get out and cast that vote and make things capture everybody else's imagination along the way.
By the way, we're this is Truth Quest, and we're talking with Larry Bryant and Jeff Peckman, who's introduced an initiative 300 to be on the ballot for this November, correct?
Correct, and that's in Denver.
Right. So, Katie, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. First of all, thanks so much for being here tonight. I had a couple of questions in regard to the actual petition itself. In one of the areas, you go in to define the people that you want on your panel. I understand you're going to have like 7 volunteer members.
Correct.
And 4 residents of Denver. The qualifications for being a member are quite extensive. Is this setup ready to go, or is it going to take you some time to wrap up in regard to putting this into action?
Well, the 7 members have to meet certain qualifications, and I set the bar high enough so that I wouldn't be able to be on the commission. So really, I wanted the voters of Denver, the citizens of Denver, to get the best benefit from their wise decision to vote yes. And so we set the bar kind of high with people, you know, needing different PhDs in natural sciences or physical science, social sciences or physical sciences, and people that have had interactions with whistleblower testimony and all that sort of thing. So we believe that we just have to have this very competent group of people. We know that such people exist in the world, and it was a balance between, actually, they can participate from anywhere in the universe. is what the way it's specifically stated.
and
I put that in there.
Go ahead.
I put that in there because in the David Letterman show, when I was interviewed about this in 2008, in the release form, it said I had to give them permission to use my photograph anywhere in the universe in perpetuity. And I thought it was a joke at first. I thought they did that just because of the topic that we had that we were going to discuss. But I found out later that that's actually quite common contractual language. So, you know, you can participate from anywhere in the universe. The Denver, it doesn't require that four Denver citizens are on it, but preference is given to them. So all else being equal, they would be favored. Four of them would be favored compared to others.
Larry, are other places watching this and possibly considering the same type of initiative on their ballots?
Well, one would certainly hope that, especially if this Denver initiative takes off and becomes an actuality, then, you know, there are 16, I believe, direct initiative states in America. And some of those states allow local, microscopic initiative to take place at the ballot box. And in which case, we would hope that the Denver initiative can be a model for anywhere people who have a right to vote, a need to vote, the will to vote, can stand up and do their voting. So, that's in the back of our minds, certainly, to have the Denver Project be a groundbreaker for anybody else who would like to follow suit.
Now, this is addressing disclosure. Is that correct?
Partly, yes.
Okay, so what is
disclosure?
Okay, and so what is disclosure meant to be in this instance?
Well, you know, disclosure, of course, refers to what the government knows, and when it knew it about UFO reality, they say they've disclosed everything they have, but they've been saying that since the 50s and 60s. They basically lied to us back in that time frame, and if they lied to us back then, imagine what they're lying about right now. So disclosure is really not up so much to the government, or in terms of agencies and officials, but it's really up to us, the governed, to demand disclosure from our representatives and these agencies and the Congress, et cetera, so that we can take back our rightful ownership of the issue. And the issue is, what are UFOs? Why are they in our airspace, landing on the ground, making themselves known as reconnaissance teams that have been sent here perhaps for whatever reason? This all comes to a head when we start asking the right questions of the right people. And this is what this initiative might entail, to continue that practice of asking the right questions of the right people. And some of these people are willing to talk under oath to a proper forum in which they can be safe in revealing what they know about UFO reality. And we're talking at this point about whistleblowers and what I call the UFO cover-up, the government's decision to deny public access to various UFO information that's been collected and massaged and filed away for decades. So with a proper platform, you might say that the Denver Commission could serve as a truth commission. That is to say, we want the truth, Uncle Sam. We're entitled to it, and you get your salary from us, the voters. So that's basically what disclosure is all about.
So you've been involved with Freedom of Information Act, trying to get disclosures for various things yourself, correct, Larry?
Yes, I have a long history going back to at least the early 70s of trying to get government documents that have been created in very serious circles of military intelligence, law enforcement, various agencies from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, for example, to the Central Intelligence Agency, to the Army Intelligence Center at Fort Monmouth, the one over in Maryland.
Fort Meade?
Fort Meade. Thank you, Jeff. The Navy, the Air Force, Coast Guard, Marine Corps, all of these militarized agencies have had a hand in collecting, analyzing, disseminating within themselves various hardcore evidence that we are being reconnoitered by spacecraft from who knows where. And this kind of information, as I say, is available, but in some cases the agencies, when you ask them about it, say, no, we can't release that. It might reveal our intelligence sources and methods. Well, we're not really asking them to reveal those matters. We want substantive information about what was seen, who saw it, what happened after they saw it, where are the records of the details of that encounter. We're not interested in whether or not confidential sources are being breached or not. That certainly is irrelevant at this point as regards what we really want to get our hands on, and that is hard evidence which, if presented to a court of law, would probably result in a grand jury indictment, for example.
And you were right.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
You don't need to, as I say, violate national security to get that kind of information.
And you were working as a writer with the U.S. Army Publications during this time period of not being able to get information?
I was a civil servant for the Army for many years, dating back to the 70s. Matter of fact, I'm 72 now, and I retired back in 94 as a writer-editor for the Army, and I, of course, never did have any official business dealing with UFO reports, but I certainly have, over time, developed friends in and out of the military who champion what I'm doing because they know themselves from discussions with their colleagues and fellow service members that this subject is extremely sensitive and seriously taken by officials. So when you have that kind of insider view of things, it certainly makes the status quo crumble in the sense that we've had enough of the status quo. It's now time for us, as people have been saying on this petition drive in support of the initiative, the online petition, it's now time to do what we're actually doing right now, and that is demanding answers from the officials whose predecessors have kept a tight hold on this information.
Now, this is for Larry or Jeff, but one of the things when I did the interview last week with Leslie Keene, she was mentioning that, you know, she was focusing in on the 5% of the unexplained UFOs. And then you've got, you know, the elephant in the room of the 95% explained. But is that information available to the public on the 95% that have been explained?
Larry, go ahead. Do you know him?
What was the question?
Leslie Keene is trying to focus on the 5% of the unexplained. Are you not hearing us?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And so.
Hello.
So, I wonder what happened to his sound.
Are you there, Jeffrey?
I'm here, Larry. We can just barely hear you.
Hello.
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me, Larry?
Somebody's messing with his sound on his phone then. I may have to call him back if he ends up dropping or doesn't hear us. Huh. This isn't the first time. Yeah, you can go ahead and hang up and I'll call you back, Larry. Okay. So maybe... Jeff,
hello.
Do you understand the question?
Yes, I do. I don't have a very good answer because... Oh, well, now you sounded better just now.
Okay. Can you hear us yet?
There.
Can you hear us, Larry? Still not?
What's the story? Jeffrey?
I can just barely hear you. Just barely.
Jeffrey, baby.
Better try again.
Larry, and I can't call him until he drops the call, so...
Oh.
Well, maybe I can see if I can drop him here and see if that'll do that. See if that'll happen, and I'll call him back.
Hang up, Larry.
Okay. I don't think he would have heard us. So I'll go ahead and redial him here if I can, and see if that happens. I don't make it easy on the phone call part. Where I could do it on the other. But anyways, I will... Katie, do you have a question while
I
go ahead?
Oh, I do. I do. Well, Jeff, why Denver?
I live here.
Oh, you live here, so it was centrally located for you.
Yes.
And I'd wonder if
you have to be a voter to do this in a city that allows it. Denver, by coincidence, happens to have probably one of the most citizen-friendly ballot initiative processes in the country. And Larry was mentioning about the number of states that have this ballot initiative process. Let's see if we connect here.
Okay.
Well, it's ringing.
Well, it might take a second here, too. So so in the meantime, there's always little... This is live radio, so...
Hello, I hope this is Melody.
Yes, it is.
Well, you want to pick up where you left off?
Okay, we can try that. I was...
You were asking about 95% of explained cases.
Uh-huh.
Remember? Leslie Cain said that, in general anyway, as many as 95% of reported cases can be explained.
Right.
Well, my answer to that is it depends on who's doing the explaining, and also it depends on the depth of evidence that you're dealing with in terms of the reported case. So that 95% might be irrelevant at this point, because if you focus on I usually tell, are we still online now?
Yes, we are.
We're on the air?
Uh-huh.
I usually say to people, imagine what the government would learn about UFO reality if it read its own UFO-related documents. And it's all there for the reading. Hard cases from military pilots, from military policemen, from people in responsible security positions, and technical vocations with enough knowledge to know that what they're looking at is either a conventional aircraft or it's not. And if it's not a conventional aircraft, then it falls in the category of UFO. So there are still on the books reporting directives that the military uses to tell its personnel, if you see something you think is a UFO, report it. And a lot of people don't know that. They don't know because they don't know to ask the questions about such a thing. Well, I know because I go so far back in the field that I keep up. I compare material that was gained back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s with what's available today. And I put two and two together and come up with the fact that there's still a UFO cover-up. There was back in the 50s, and there has been ever since. How long will it go on? as long as the government gets away with it.
Well, that was one of the things when I attended the MUFON conference, and I mentioned this last week, is that, you know, a lot of them didn't think that, they were going to be any, was going to be disclosure if we continue to expect the government to come forward. And then how much is enough evidence? It's kind of like with 9/11, you know, it seems to me like there's more than plenty evidence to even have a commission to look, re-examine what took place. And when it comes to UFOs, there seems to be a whole lot more documented going on out there. And I guess, I mean, according to some of the people that attended the MUFON event, like George Filer, I mean, they're constantly getting information. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that can be discounted. But in that 95%, there has to be some good, credible information. And even if it... To me, one of the most important things that I feel why there should be disclosure is to find out about some of this technology that is being passed off as UFOs or not admitted to that is being used on the public.
Well, you know, as I say, because there has been concealment of valid insider information on UFO encounters, the public is left in a void, and the void encourages conspiratorial thinking. It encourages total conjecture about what is, can be, will be, might be, and so forth. So it confuses the public. The public throws up its hands and says, this just isn't worth my time to spend researching on my own, and I'll just have to let it go. Well, they're letting go an historic opportunity to help solve the mystery. You don't have to be unemployed or retired to take this up as a pursuit, because let's face it, if you're intelligent enough to get out of high school and college, you're intelligent enough to enter this field with an open mind and, as I say, start asking the right questions of the right people and demanding answers, right, honest answers from officials who can, if they were allowed to, end the discussion once and for all by holding a press conference and say, we'd like you to meet Mr. and Mrs. X from Planet X. And then go on from there. But no, the government, in this country at least, is running on a basis of some kind of a fear. And fear is never a good policy. Look at, fear is what got us in trouble with, Iraq and Afghanistan, endless wars based on fear. So do we want endless wars with visiting extraterrestrials? I certainly hope not.
So you would feel better about it if the government just came out and said, yes, there are UFOs, and yes, there are ETs, and maybe they
well,
have a non-disclosure with the people that own the UFOs and aren't allowed to talk about it.
That we have too- foreign governments have come very close lately to making that very announcement. Brazil officials have released volumes of material that was kept under wraps for decades. Those reports are solid, sound, reliable reports from citizens who, if they gave the same information to a court of law, would be entitled to a fair hearing. And that's all I'm asking at this point, that the evidence is there, has always been there, enough of it to make the average person, a rational human being, conclude that something's going on beyond what the government admits to. What that something is what we want to find out.
Larry, are you...
Go ahead.
Okay. Are you familiar with the book, Report from Iron Mountain, Larry?
I've heard the title. I
How
haven't
about
read
you?
The book.
Have you, Jeff?
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay, because there seems to be... In this book, and I really highly recommend that you, that if you can get it, your hands on a copy of it, to look at it, because it was, in the first preface of the book, they talk about how it was a hoax. But when you read through this book that was written back in the 60s, and mine came out of a Lowry Air Force Base library, which I thought was kind of interesting because they were, you know, trying to pass it off as a hoax. But at the same time, when you read through the book, everything that they had put into the plans leading up to this point in time have happened, except for this UFO uniting the world event. So it is well worth checking out and see what you think about it. But
is it a novel?
No, it was, and I had my copies disappeared in it, and I had it up until just recently, and I cannot figure out where it went. And but it was a group of men, I believe they were military, that met at Iron Mountain, and I'm not sure where Iron Mountain was, but I believe it was in the Northeast, but I'm just going by memory right now. But this was written as, if you had read it and not read the preface, it would have sounded like, you know, total plans on what they wanted, where they wanted to go, and how they wanted to unite the world in the future from the 60s, and how they would go about it. So,
well, is this book a novel or is it nonfiction?
You know, if they claim it's a hoax, then I guess they put it in the novel category. But I wouldn't put it in that, but I don't know what you would call it.
Well, as I say, I have heard the title. I just haven't seen the book itself. So I'll certainly try to if I ever see one, I'll pick it up and give it a once over, because, you know, even fictional works today are valuable if they address a vital public issue. And I don't know how more vital you can get than the UFO presence worldwide that we've had since modern times, since the early 40s. There's been a UFO presence. And are we so lame of mind that we can't accept that fact and start digging seriously and assiduously towards more answers? I hope not. I hope we're not so completely blind that we can't see what's staring us right in the face.
Well, how much of this do you think is our own technology, though?
Some of it may, you know, like the B-2 bomber may be partially running on anti-gravity systems that may have been reverse engineered. Some people theorize to that effect. Some people think those big black triangles, huge ships that hover silently above neighborhoods, are some form of advanced aerial craft that didn't originate on the planet, but maybe we had a role, our government, that is, had a role in and letting them be present. Maybe we're exchanging crew members in some fashion to keep these triangles airborne. I don't know, but I'm telling you this, people continue to see these huge black triangles, sometimes with lights underneath, three lights and one in the middle, maybe like that. It scares a lot of people. It makes them scratch their heads and say, are we being lied to by our government on this issue? Well I'd say we are.
Jeff, what do you feel?
Anytime somebody tells me about a triangular craft, I tend to just set that one aside, just because it has to have the aerodynamics for flight and turning and all that. There's probably more overlap, more similarity, I would think, between our advanced military craft and that particular shape of extraterrestrial craft. The other kind, you know, the ones that are changing shape and going all over the place and round and, you know, oval and coming in and out of sight, like phasing in and out of this dimension, those are what I pay more attention to. But there certainly is a lot of, you know, it's like what something that Larry said earlier about the cover-up. You know, if the government can contain this secret, if they can cover up something with that's this big of a secret, then they can keep a lot of other things secret. They can keep it secret how they, you know, squander hundreds of billions and maybe even trillions of dollars or invest them into things that protect an elite part of the population in case there's a disaster. They can just get away with a lot. Part of the reason for the ballot initiative, a big reason, was just to get this out into the open, to engage the public, to put this in the light of public scrutiny, really just to increase the amount of light that's focused on this issue, and then all kinds of things will be seen. The scandalous things, the secret things that are not related to national security, the controlling interests that, you know, we didn't elect, but it seemed to be controlling the people that we do elect. Just a lot more will come to light when you have human consciousness focused on something. And so, you know, I take the stand of forget the government. When people ask me about government disclosure, do I think government disclosure is going to happen? Well, I have to make the distinction between government of the people that we elect as public servants and what they know and what's in those files, or government as we the people, with our own evidence within our families, within our homes, within our communities, that even the government doesn't have, the elected government doesn't have. So my focus is entirely on the what the people can gather together, independent of the elected government, and share that with each other. So this is disclosure by the people, to the people, for the people, whatever you want to call it. And there is quite a lot of information and evidence out there that can be shared. I think there's enough that if the elected government never released what it really knows, we could still achieve much of the goal that we seek from government, you know, elected government disclosure, enough to where we can engage in discussions about what to do next, to get into the practical details of how to interact with these extraterrestrial intelligent beings. Because any disclosure that comes from the federal government is going to be so tainted and diminished in value because of the political motivation, I just don't have a lot of interest in it. You know? I mean, I'm almost in a race to beat them to the punch, to get the truth out to the people before they get completely confused and deceived when they're paying attention. So that's sort of the activist peasants with pitchforks approach that I prefer. You know, Stephen Bassett, the lobbyist for this issue in Washington, D.C., he likes to talk about the disclosure by government officials as disclosure with a capital D. I would actually argue the other way. I would say that disclosure by the citizens to the citizens, by the people to the people, is actually disclosure with a capital D. And the reason I say that, again, is because anything that comes out of the federal government is going to be diminished in value because of all the political motivations. And any person that makes that announcement, they're going to be thinking of their term in office as the highest priority. They're going to have a very carefully scripted message, probably read off a teleprompter, so that they can satisfy their own agenda, they can satisfy the big donors to their campaign, they can satisfy the people that vote for them. And somewhere down the list is the simple, plain truth, if it's at all on their list. Whereas we, the people, are not burdened by all of that, and we can just share this information freely at a level of personal interaction with people that we trust. So there's two sides of that. I mean, I don't know that we'll ever know the truth about the evidence that the elected government has had. They've, you know, people, one of the things the debunkers like to say, they say, oh, there isn't a shred of proof, a shred of evidence to support the claim that we're being visited by extraterrestrial beings. And I always like to think back to the days of Enron's downfall, imagining these executives saying, there isn't a shred of evidence that we've done anything wrong, even though at the same time, they're shredding the evidence. So, you know, there's, and that has happened. I mean, we know that the photos have been altered, they've been hidden, they've been destroyed, they've been passed on. Evidence has been passed on to the private sector out of reach of the Freedom of Information Act. So, you know, it's two approaches. I there's no way to predict the future, but Larry's hit on some very, very important points. Engaging the youth is very important. I think he can relate to the youth because of his ever youthfulness that he always displays. And we're encouraging the youth to get involved through mock elections in their high schools and colleges. We've created a hip-hop music video called Pink UFO that really is a very serious message. People can look at that. And there's another rock group from England. I'm going to get off the track here a little bit because these are all things that Larry reminded me of, and it fits into the big picture. They are all about opposing the cover-up and resisting the mind control of the government. But they're a very popular rock group in England called Muse. And just about 10 days ago, they did two concerts in London in Wembley Stadium, big open-air stadium. And they had, they're known for their very elaborate props. They even won an MTV award for the special effects in one of their music videos. And this prop was a large inflated disc craft, flying saucer that came in hovered over the crowd, and then it was large enough that someone was inside and an acrobat dropped out of the middle of it in the bottom and was dangling there, scattering glitter, sparkling glitter all over the crowd. And this was a huge story in the news. It was all over. Now, I saw that, and I thought, oh, my goodness, why couldn't we have something that spectacular going on in Denver during this campaign? I thought, you know, it probably takes a year or two to plan something like that. So I was just lamenting that fact, and then I went on the Internet just to read more about this group, and I looked at their tour schedule, and they're playing in Denver at the Pepsi Center October 2nd.
It's coming right up.
I thought, heavens, what a gift.
You're listening to KHENLPFM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And Truth Quest programs are archived at www.givemesometruth. And my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien. And our guests this evening are Larry Bryant and Jeff Peckman, who's introduced a ballot initiative in Denver on creating an extraterrestrial affairs commission. And before we get any further, would you guys give out your web addresses so if people could kind of become familiar with who you are and what you guys do, and so that, and if they want to plug into this issue, then they, I guess, we'd also want to have where this initiative is posted.
Larry, do you have a website?
I have what they call a blog, sir. And the URL for the blog is http://UFOVIEW .posterous.com. That's my blog that's been there for about 2 years, and viewers can open it up and see some essays from me, see some reprints from my column in UFO Magazine, and they might want to order my first book, which is called UFO Politics at the White House, Citizens Rally Round Jimmy Carter's Promise. Of course, that refers to Jimmy Carter, who, when he was running for president of the United States, was asked if elected, would he free up UFO information to the public? He said, of course, he would try doing just that. Well, he failed on his promise, but citizens, when they found out about it, wrote thousands of letters to the White House saying, Mr. President, please honor your promise and let us know all about UFO reality. And indeed, one section of the book pertains to young people, students, writing letters to the president. A number of these students were doing term papers on UFOs. So even back then in the late 70s, young people held the key to persuading our government to do the right thing about UFO disclosure. And so, your readers, that book is still available from Galdi Press, G-A-L-D-E, press.com. So I recommend you pick it up because there's some very historical material in there.
And Jeff, your website. Oh, before I go any further, you can also get on Larry's blog by just typing in Larry W. Bryant, and it will come up on Google.
All right.
Jeff?
Yes, the campaign website is www.extracampaign.org. That's the normal spelling, E-X-T-R-A, campaign, C-A-M-P-A-I-G-N.org. That has a link to the online petition. It has links to the voter education material. You can also see the David Letterman, the Letterman interview from June 10th of 2008. It has five reasons to vote for this ballot initiative, Initiative 300. It has a couple other pages, donations page, and we would like to invite that because we'd like to do some paid advertising to supplement the endorsements that we're getting and some of the free media coverage. And that will keep growing in information, so that's a good place to go to get updates on news.
Oh, by the way, I had a fan kind of email us this report from Iron Mountain on the possibility and desirability of peace by Leonard C. Lewin. Report from Iron Mountain on the possibility and desirability of peace. So, I mean, it's a real book. It's not a very big one. It's pretty small, actually, but it's very interesting.
And so apparently it's not a novel. Right.
It's a report.
It's a report.
Okay. As I say, I have heard the title, but never have seen a copy of the book. So, but as I say, the UFO issue is so large that you can pick a slice of it and spend months being a specialist in analyzing that slice of UFO awareness. And, the initiative is basically one of making the public more aware of how important the subject is. I mean, it's such a natural activity that I'm surprised somebody hasn't done it before Jeffrey did. But I'm certainly glad he stepped up to the plate and is hitting a home run every time he looks around.
Well,
Thank you, Larry.
What if this wasn't about, okay, and I'm just posing this scenario. What if this wasn't about something from outer space, or extraterrestrial? What if it was just our governments or something terrestrial creating these unidentified objects? Wouldn't it still be worthy of this type of a commission?
I think so, and even locally in Denver, when we were collecting signatures, people would come up to us all day on the street and start sharing their story of a UFO sighting or contact or having been on a craft or knowing somebody that was in the military and part of the cover-up. This would go on all day. These were people just literally coming to us off just as we were standing on the street corner or just at a booth somewhere. And so there's much more information that is seeped in and much more experience within our communities than most people realize. It's just been kept off the radar, because they didn't want the ridicule. They didn't want to deal with the attitudes of friends and relatives. But in us, they saw a sympathetic person that could, listen to this story and maybe offer some guidance or just enjoy the story. But, you know, all kinds of information will come out of this as we start to gather the evidence, as the commission starts to gather the evidence, and it gets to be discussed and people feel more comfortable talking about it. I think you're going to see that a lot of issues will be discussed. Even, again, off the street, people say, well, how do you know they're just not from other dimensions? How do you know they're not us in the future, time traveling back to now? You know, and I don't. I don't really have a good answer to those things, but I'm encouraged that they would even be thinking that way.
Well, this is why I'm starting to look at this subject a lot more serious, even though I've done it in the past but had set it aside for a number of years, is because, again, if there is that possibility, there's got to be some tremendous technology involved there. And I cannot imagine the human race avoiding it and not doing everything they can to create the technology that would be involved, whether it is extraterrestrial or terrestrial. But it makes a big, huge blanket to hide under if they want to keep secrecy.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a problem. Too many people are comfortable being under the blanket, just pulling it over their heads and saying, you know, I just don't want to know about this.
It does scare
I got other
people.
Stuff to think about.
Exactly. The fear factor is always prevalent. For example, people don't want to hear about the alleged abduction cases because that's the whole scary scenario. Somebody being taken from his home and experimented upon or observed or in some way held hostage for a while. This is unnerving for most people to contemplate. What if it happened to their family? How would they handle it? You know, and there's apparently evidence showing that abductions occur from generations of one particular family here and there. So, again, the abduction phenomenon, whatever it is, it's serious. If the government has any role in it at all, then that's all the more reason we need to find out what that role is.
Well, I really feel like the disclosure thing needs to be looked at no matter where it comes from, because when you're talking about abductions, I was just listening to a couple of programs in the last day or two about abductions that take place on this planet by groups or individuals that they don't bother. I mean, you've got legitimate investigators and policemen that have been trying to uncover how these events take place, and nobody's paying attention. So it's time to start talking about the truth and pulling our heads out of the sand. Disclosing in this avenue might start disclosing in other areas that we might start wanting to take care of some truth.
You're very right, Melody, and even the relationship, you were talking about the 9/11 events, there was a ballot initiative that they collected enough signatures to put this ballot initiative on the New York City ballot to either reinvestigate the whole thing, something like that. But the clerk had the power to just say no. They did everything right. They did it all according to the law, but they just said, we're not going to put this on the ballot, just like that. Now, fortunately, that's why I say Denver is a much more initiative-friendly town, and the Western United States in general is. There's 10,000 cities and towns and counties throughout the United States where they can do some form of ballot initiative, citizen-sponsored ballot initiative, and a handful of states. But it's just more friendly out west here, Arizona, Oregon, especially, or California, they do a lot of that. Yeah, so those are the top states in the West, and I think what happened was as the population started moving west, they realized pretty early on that things were going to go in a bad direction in Washington, D.C. with all that concentrated power. So they kept some power for themselves, the people that came out west, and that became the ballot initiative process.
And rightly so, because if you do a study of ballot initiatives, you can't get any better government than that when the people have a voice in the very affairs that they have entrusted for years to bureaucrats and capricious legislatures. I just think every state should have ballot initiatives, and every town and county and city should do the same, because it's as American as you can get.
Katie?
Right.
Katie?
Yes.
Do you got any questions?
I do. I'd like to go over your five reasons to vote yes on the Initiative 300, because I just thought they were very valuable. The number one was common sense. The second one was we ought to do it because it's the law. The third was the people have the right to know. The fourth was there is no cost in regard to the commission being established. And basically no risk. And I
That's
think
right. There's no risk because the Denver City Council can repeal this commission, this ordinance which establishes the commission. They can repeal it after 6 months. But, you know, after 6 months, if it's producing something of value for the community, they probably won't want to touch it.
It wouldn't
and
be common sense
like?
To touch it. Right. Go ahead.
What would that look like?
It wouldn't be common sense for the council to cancel it if it is being a productive, useful tool for promoting UFO awareness. It wouldn't make any common sense to stop it in its tracks.
Well,
exactly.
And are you trying to keep this out of official government entities' hands when you create this commission?
Well, it will be, you know, there are already 80 board, at least 80 boards and commissions in Denver. Most of those were established by the mayor, maybe some by the city council. I was told today this might be the first commission that would be established by a vote of the people. And so it gives it somewhat of the authority of a government entity without surrendering control to the government. And it's a self-sufficient activity. They have the authority to raise grants, gifts, and donations. But that's very specific. This is the language of the ballot initiative, and that language will not change. Unlike promises of a candidate can change before and after the election. This ordinance, the language is fixed. Whatever is voted into law, and it says it will be funded only by grants, gifts, and donations without any requirement from a fiscal outlay from the city budget. So, yeah, no risk, no cost, but a lot to gain because this has been kept secret for so long. And I would agree with Larry as far as the citizens' involvement in this. Other countries are releasing their information to various degrees, quite a few of them. But intuitively, it just seems that for this country, based on our history and how we came into being, that it really is the citizens. It really is a task for the citizens to do and not for our elected public officials. And going through that process, we will regain that power that we've surrendered so much of. We will empower ourselves to investigate more things, to explore more things, to think outside the limitations of what the elected officials are faced with. They can never be on the cutting edge of anything. You know, that puts them in a fringe group, and they can't afford to do that. So they have to wait for us to show the way, and when the percentages look good enough, then they'll jump on board. But this is really our task.
Now, these ballot initiatives, when you were talking about them earlier, it's more of a Western thing, Western United States thing? Is that what you're saying?
Predominantly in the West. Most of the Western states, if you just look on a colored map, color-coded map, you'll see that most of the West is colored to have ballot initiative rights at the state level and certainly at the county and city and town level. The further east you go, the states that do have ballot initiative rights are much more difficult. You know, Florida, I think Maine, a couple other, Ohio. So they have those rights. New England does it in a little bit of a different way. It's more of a traditional town meeting setting where they can essentially used the votes of the people at the town meeting to advance different policies within the town. But it's not exactly the same as where they petitioned to put something on the ballot. It's called something else, still very effective, and a lot can get done that way. But the real benefit of this ballot initiative process is that it does become a binding ordinance or a binding constitutional amendment or a binding change to the city charter. And it's such a powerful tool that we have. You know, it's derived from the First Amendment of being able to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And in the Colorado Constitution, it establishes that the first power to be established is the power of initiative.
So,
theoretically,
then, if you had a state that had these ballot initiatives, and maybe you had a state that didn't have these ballot initiatives, but you had a national event that needed to have a commission created, some other state could possibly bring about a 9/11 initiative.
What do you think, Larry? It's an interesting concept.
Well, you know, there are two kinds of initiatives. One's direct initiative, like the one in Denver there, and then a few other states have indirect initiatives by which the legislature produces the language for a local or statewide referendum. And that language is set not by the people, but by the representatives in the legislature. So these people go to the polls and they vote yes or no on whatever the referendum is posing. So, you know, somebody in Albany, New York, the capital I think it is, some legislator might want to try that device of indirect initiative in the form of a referendum. And see if they have enough votes there to keep it moving, because
actually,
that is an American way to do things. Put an issue before the public, let them vote.
Right. There is an extra thing that can be added to that, in that the referendum, even in Denver, a referendum is something that's put to the people for a vote by the city council. Hmm. Now, some states they would define indirect initiative, and it's an indirect process to have the referendum put up by the legislators, but there's also an indirect initiative where the initiative itself, and I thought that this was what was tried in Missouri, the initiative itself statewide would have passed a law resolution requiring that the federal representatives from Missouri do certain things in Washington, D.C., promote this issue, for example. So that's where the initiative is, you know, telling the elected officials what they're supposed to be doing, and a direct initiative is actually passing the law itself that everybody's bound by. And then there's that third one, which is the referendum from the lawmakers themselves that is put to the people. It gets complicated because if you go from town to town or state to state, the rules are so different that when I've been asked if I would coordinate other initiatives in other places, I have to decline because it's impossible to really keep up with. Each person that would want to try this really just needs to go to their elections office at the state or local level and ask, do we have initiative rights? Is there a packet of information that explains all this? And that's where you start. That's where I started. So there's a lot of ways to go around it. It could get very complicated. You know, it just happens to be easier here, fortunately.
So one of your main purposes here is to collect and distribute information and to direct people who have had such experiences to reputable people, to have them have an outlet.
That's true. Yes, because one of the campaign supporters also writes articles for Examiner.com, and he wanted to write an article about how people were treated when they tried to seek help if they thought they'd been abducted. And he called five different psychiatrists in the Denver area and said, you know, I think I've been abducted. I think I've been on a craft, an alien craft. And four of them just laughed. Four of them just laughed at him. And the fifth one just kind of blew him off in some way. So this is why we need to have some protocol to know where to send people to reputable professionals that know how to deal with this in a respectful, confidential way.
There is a psychiatrist in Fort Collins that specializes in such events here in Colorado. She's been here for a few years.
It's also
good to know who that person is.
I didn't hear it. Was it Larry?
No, he
go ahead.
Jeff just wanted to know if you knew the name.
Oh, I will get that to you.
Okay.
Now, what were you going to say, Larry?
Well, I have a question for you, Melody.
Uh-huh.
And that is, you live in Salinas?
Salida.
Is that how you say?
Salida, Colorado.
They probably have their direct initiative for that city. Is that a big place? Or,
it's about 5,000. It's about 5,000 people.
But so they probably have a council of some sort, governing body?
Oh, yes.
Maybe you might know somebody who may want to pick up where St. Louis left off. St. Louis was our target to get a proclamation passed by the city council. A proclamation is a form of law, by the way. And the language of the proclamation basically says that year such and such is hereby declared the year of UFO awareness. And then and you may want to add a few more lines after that, but that's basically what the mayor of the town stamp once the voters said, yes, let's proclaim year so-and-so the year of UFO awareness. And again, you probably wouldn't need a whole lot of signatures for that in such a small place as yours, but if you got them, you would be dovetailing with the current project in Denver. It's just a thought. If you know somebody who'd like to do that.
Okay.
You can go to, you can find the language of the St. Louis proposal online somewhere and then just pick up that language, which was approved by the voter registration people, the voter registrar or whatever it's called. They did approve the language and they did get a petition drafted up and circulated, but they just didn't have the manpower to circulate and get enough signatures. Thousands and thousands of them. You wouldn't need thousands in your place. So, if you know, if some of your listeners, if they know somebody who lives in your town, here's an opportunity for them to indirectly support what Jeffrey's been doing for 2 years.
And how does this ordinance impact the infracting the official cover-up by our government, by taking it out of their hands?
No, there's really two things that can be achieved. One is collecting evidence that's available to the commission from wherever it can come and putting that on the Denver government website or displaying it in public in some other way. So there's the legally binding provision that would require the commission to do that. But then there's also the effect that that might have on the federal government. The local initiative cannot require the federal government to do anything, and that was never the intent. But that might actually be the result. The federal government, as people wake up, as we saturate Denver with this awareness of an extraterrestrial presence, that might become like a domino. And other, you know, spread throughout the country, and then it's kind of an awareness uprising, a demand, not as a requirement of the ballot initiative in Denver, but as a consequence of generating that public awareness, and that at some point it reaches a critical mass, and the federal government might just have to give in and start sharing some stuff, especially if it's coming not only from, the demand is coming from this country, from this from the people, but from other countries. And I've heard from someone who has some inside contacts that on two occasions the President of France has told President Obama that if the United States does not reveal its, you know, make this announcement, reveal its UFO files and really declare that we have these extraterrestrial visitors, then France would do it instead.
You know, again,
by the way, go ahead.
I think we can, just by the fact that if we start demanding that we get this information and start discussing it in the public, the government will have no recourse but to start coming clean on it, because that's one of the things that we've been doing out in the media in the last few years, is trying to get discussions about things that in the past would not have even been conceivable. One of them is along the lines of geoengineering and or the technologies of being able to create earthquakes and things of this sort, where before we were laughed off the discussion, and now it's, you're hearing people out there talk as though it's, you know, it's out there and it's happening. So maybe doing that we need to get this kind of thing going with the UFO thing, just to start getting some of this information out there for the technologies and what is really going on with our government and their involvement, whether it is extraterrestrial or not. Yeah, comments?
I do. One thing that you hit on again is just engaging the people in that way will start revealing a lot of other things. And if you read through, I would encourage everybody listening to this to read through those 8 pages of the voter education material, because it contains the seeds, a condensed version of a lot of these interviews that you've probably had on this station and a lot of others, even things like where our money goes in the federal government. And I mentioned a few instances. One, it's a fairly, I think, well-known quote from Donald Rumsfeld back in 2002, I believe, where he said that according to some estimates, as much as $2.3 trillion in transactions cannot be accounted for. Now, and that amounts to about $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. So I've put this in this 8-page newspaper that for Colorado, that amounts to about $36 billion. And for Denver, it's about $4.5 billion. And all these programs are being cut at the local level, and we're being told to squeeze and save and be frugal, and, you know, we have to cut that program and all these things, and arguing about tax cutting initiatives for and against. What really needs to happen is that we all just need to unite and start challenging the federal government to be more accountable with our federal tax money. There was an instance where about 8 years ago, the Auditor General for the USDA went to Congress to ask for $100 million. Now that, you know, to us, that's a lot of money. That could support all kinds of programs, farm programs and getting people, you know, education for farm communities and all that. But it wasn't for any program. He wanted the $100 million to help find the $5 billion that was missing from the $95 billion budget at the USDA. And there's other stories that are also in this newspaper, one where a woman went and worked with this company, and she said it was a government contractor, and people were sitting around playing games on their computers and really not doing any work at all. And she was just told to send out some form letters, you know, to kind of keep the business going, to make it look like something was going on. And her boss at that company, she looked up that name, and it turned out that the name of that person was in a CIA website listing dead people, former CIA people that were dead. And so you got to wonder, what is going on here? You know, the amount of siphoned money, wasted money, money that just disappears in vast amounts at the federal level could do wonders for the whole world if we really knew what was going on. but there are entire books written about how that amount of money is going into building underground, you know, railroads, entire cities, colonies on Mars or the moon. I mean, it's just involved in this other whole secret aspect of government, secret government projects that most of the population is totally aware of, unaware of, and yet we're all suffering from, you know, being deprived of jobs and good incomes and health care. So this is going to start shaking loose a lot of people as they see this collection of knowledge. And it's knowledge, it's information that reinforces, you know, each other. From every direction, you look at the, whether it's celebrities who have had contact with extraterrestrials, or well-known political leaders who have had UFO sightings, or it's the people at the talking about the UFOs and the nukes, or the advanced technology that's been suppressed. You know, it's all part of the same murky, dark, secretive government that we just need to pour light in there and see what's there. And I think that, in some, at least some small way, will be what comes from this ballot initiative.
We're talking to Jeff Peckman and Larry Bryant, and Jeff has introduced a ballot initiative in Denver on the to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission. And there's a whole lot of avenues that this is why I find the pertinence of finding a crack in the infrastructure that we can start getting some truth out there. And what we're fighting with right now is our government's giving, you know, trying to conceal more and more and more, making it harder for us to get information to be able to get at our rights. And yet in this aspect, maybe there might be a way that things will start opening up in ways that we might not even imagine with this kind of an initiative. I was on a website not too long ago, about a year or so ago, because they had a symposium in Colorado Springs, and they had a whole part of it that was designed on, you know, people and being involved in space, I mean, the everyday citizen being involved in space exploration. And there was a part of this, you know, designed to be in this symposium. And then I'm looking at a lecture series that's fixing to be aired here in our area on the future of human spaceflight, space exploration mission. So just can you imagine how much of that might open up information to the public and not just what their promotional aspects are? Because we also know that there's a lot of, I suspect that the microwave in its own right was initially some kind of weapon, and it may have been a space-based type thing. I don't know, but it's been used in a lot of other different factors. We might be able to start opening up these technologies so we can kind of understand what's going on out there. What do you think?
Larry, go ahead.
Well,
take that one.
You know, some people have theorized that the one reason the government won't open its files completely on its UFO lore is that we, the hoi polloi, can't handle the truth of UFO reality. Well, if the initiative does pass and a commission starts working, this might send a signal to Washington saying, listen, these people in Denver can handle UFO reality because they want to handle it. Therefore, maybe we should put our heads together with these commissioners and come up with a little partnership, maybe, and change the paradigm. That would be certainly an unintended consequence, but it actually might happen, because there are a number of people in government who are not satisfied with the current policy of secrecy and denial and misinformation. They just aren't happy with it, but they're afraid to speak up. And if they see that somebody out there in the middle of the country not only speaking up, but showing the way for others to speak up, then maybe there could be a reconciliation that we could pursue, as well as a truth commission. You could call it a truth, UFO truth and reconciliation commission. So, again, all of this business about space travel, space research and development, it can coalesce with what we're trying to do with the extraterrestrial presence. Make it known, make it acceptable to talk about in public, and make it so that the public can fully be engaged and not be constrained by their government.
We're certainly being programmed to be through the media with various television and movies to accept in some form or fashion this sort of thing. So where do you think they're going with this, and yet at the same time they're trying to keep it from us?
Well, you know, some people theorize that Spielberg's E.T. movie was a bellwether for coming disclosure. Well, it's sure taken long to get here, but maybe America will be perhaps the last one on the totem pole to do the disclosure. Maybe a country like Israel or Germany or some other European country could get the jump on us, I'm sure there's some officials over here that would be relieved. Well, we don't have to deal with that big boogeyman anymore. Let's go find another country to attack somewhere, and let the UFO subject sink or swim on its own weight. Who knows?
You know, you asked about, there certainly has been that history, and I dedicate half a page of this newspaper to describing, well, a full page, one to the half of it to the cover-up and using the mainstream media, including the America's most trusted man, or voice, was it Walter Cronkite, even seemed to be involved in providing some deceptive information. But the other side of it is the celebrities, the cultural icons, and Hollywood movies and television, that on the one hand, they're denying everything. It's almost like trying to keep a lid on it. But with the other hand, they're releasing it in the form of fiction so that it's cushioned. You know, we think, oh, it's just fiction. Even if it's upsetting, it's still fiction. But yet we're still getting acclimated. And what I've observed is an acceleration of these kinds of movies getting more and more real. Avatar, biggest movie in history, total amount of money. And then four more movies coming out between now and next summer. One called Skyline, I think is the name. Another, Battle Over Los Angeles, where it starts with the whole scenario of the craft, apparent craft that was hovering over Los Angeles in 1942. And the military, civil defense alarms went off, and the military was out there shooting at it, and shells were falling on people and killing them. They weren't doing anything to the craft. And some of those people were interviewed by the Ancient Aliens, History Channel's Ancient Aliens show that was a five-part series this last spring. I was in the second half of the last episode a few times. And that pilot of that Ancient Aliens show in March of 2009, when they first aired it, that was the most successful, most watched program that the History Channel had ever aired in its history. So the attention, the interest is there, and they know that, and that was a very, very good series, and they're still replaying that. But now you have Spielberg coming up with another E.T.-related movie next summer called Super 8. You've got Ron Howard, another big director, doing Cowboys and Aliens. He usually does pretty serious, good quality shows. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a silly show. Even if it's not portraying the ETs in the way we would like, we do know that there were sightings of craft in the West, back in the 1800s.
Right.
And so, you know, there's, and then there's a couple more. I don't even remember. Oh, one, well, I think I mentioned those four. And now this NBC show called The Event, which everybody I know thinks it's about the president disclosing that we're being visited. But of course, once you, everybody knows the secret, then they can just rewrite the script and change the ending so that people really don't know what the ending is. So, you know, it could be all over the place. But there's just more and more and more. And you, in Colorado right now, you can go into a King Soopers store and you can buy a box of cereal that says alien cereal. I'm not kidding you. It's just right off the shelf, $1.88. I wouldn't eat it. It's got three different colors of dye in it and a bunch of other junk. I mean, it's everywhere, you know. So we are still getting acclimated, and I think it's accelerating. And the whole truth of this, and the fact that this ballot initiative is going on at all, and we're getting the support from the Latino community and all these other related things, it does seem to be accelerating.
Well, it's an opportunity to get them to come clean, because when you go, one of the things that I've started doing is going back and looking at the old science fiction movies, and so much of the information or technologies in there, I'm just, you know, my jaw drops, because there's so much predictive programming or you name it in it, that you have to wonder, do they really know, is this, are they predicting the future, or do they really know, and this is technology that they're sitting on and just feeding it to us one little tidbit at a time?
That makes a lot of sense, and I will add just very briefly, the science fiction movie that has the distinction of being labeled the worst science fiction movie ever was Plan 9 from Outer Space.
When was that?
And it was bad. It was bad. The graphics, it was just, and the acting was absolutely terrible. But if you listen to the dialogue, it's actually very real and truthful.
Plan 9? You have
to go back and listen to it.
When was this made?
What do you think, Larry? 1955 or something?
55, something like that, yeah. It's probably a little better than the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
The Giant Killer Tomatoes,
that's a cult film, they call it.
That's right.
Well, you know, that Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, if you... And what they're doing with some of them in GMOs, you have to wonder.
Yes, true. True. They probably, somebody was foreseeing that.
I have noticed a lot of bumper stickers that say, I believe in UFOs, not the Air Force, going up around here in town, which I think
really?
Yeah.
Man, that's something. Probably young people doing it.
Yeah, most of them are definitely under 30.
Yeah.
But I think it makes people think, if nothing else. Because we have a lot of sightings here in Colorado, especially over in the San Luis Valley. And I live in the shadow of Cheyenne Mountain, so I get to see some things here that I'm sure aren't visible other places. And have either of you seen UFOs?
Go ahead, Larry.
Negative here. I've never seen China either. I don't need to see UFOs. There's enough testimony to know that there are sighting reports, and this is what J. Allen Hynek, the former astronomical advisor to the Air Force Project Blue Book, said. He cautioned us that we're not studying UFOs, we're studying UFO reports. And that's a good distinction, because there's plenty of pay dirt in those reports if you can get your hands on the right ones. So, as I say, I don't need to see a flying saucer to know that they've been reported by hundreds of thousands of people worldwide for centuries, perhaps. That's academic at this point. So... if I see one, I'm not going to tell you people, because I know I can't stand the ridicule I would get. Oh, sure, Larry, you saw a flying saucer. Ha ha. After all these years, it's sort of anticlimactic, right?
Well, okay, maybe. But I will share my UFO story, because I can get by with it easier. But I've only seen one, and it was very interesting because I had just listened to a lecture by an up-and-coming physicist named Nassim Haramein.
Oh, yeah.
And his information that he's sharing is really tying the whole thing together, consciousness and extraterrestrial reality and ancient aliens and the full range of things, free energy. And it's just extraordinary information. He started mentioning only about a year ago at this time that he had had contact at a very young age with extraterrestrials. Anyway, that's his story. But I came out of his lecture down at the campus downtown, where we actually had this press conference with Stan Romanek's Alien in the Window video, same campus. And I was just standing in the site on the parking lot about 10:15 at night, and I just waiting a few minutes so I wouldn't have to pay the parking fee. And then I was on the cell phone, and I was just wandering around, you know, killing time, talking, and I just turned, and there were puffy clouds in the night sky. It was dark, but you could see the clouds were lit up a little bit. And just as I turned, what caught my eye was this green ball of light that just shot from one cloud over to the other cloud, just like that. And it was not dissipating, wasn't fizzling out, and it was bright green. I'd never seen anything like that. Now, if somebody told me that there was a meteor shower that night with a lot of bright green, you know, meteors, I'd say, okay, fine, that's what I saw. But that was just one thing. It just went across. Now, I just sort of let it go. And I told a few people. I thought it was interesting. The next morning, as I usually do, I was looking in the news for UFO articles just to see what the most recent thing was. Now, that night happened to be the night of the day that Michael Jackson died.
Huh.
The next morning, I was looking in the UFO articles in Google News, and there was a headline that said, UFO seen over Neverland, his home. There were people out there with their candlelight vigil or whatever they were doing at night. Two people saw a UFO, and they described it as a green ball of light hovering over Neverland. And I thought, now that is some kind of coincidence. But I can get by with this, and you were talking about San Luis Valley in Denver, and on the very front page of this 8-page newspaper, I mention public safety, UFOs, and extraterrestrial contact, because every city government has as its highest priority public safety. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned why, you know, these reports need to be taken seriously as public safety issues, because some people are getting abducted. It might be from extraterrestrial intelligent beings. It might be from the U.S. military faking an abduction. But in any case, people have these experiences. And fortunately, in Denver, we have a former Denver police officer who has reported encounters with four extraterrestrial races, including, and this all happened in San Luis Valley, mm-hmm. where he was at the time of 9/11/2001. So that's how, one way he remembers where he was on that day, because he was with these different races, and he has very detailed descriptions of them. Now, this is not a guy that you want to mess with. He was a former Army criminal investigator. He was a Vietnam veteran. And when he goes into his stories about Vietnam, you just, you know, it's almost too much. You know, I mean, it gets pretty wild. And he was an advisor to international clientele on management of counterterrorism. He's a nationally known expert in stalking and predatory behavior and conflict management. He was featured on CBS News, that show called 48 Hours, some years ago, and they referred to him as a real-life equalizer. Now, you have to know what that show was about.
An assassin.
Yeah, appreciate that. And he was also declared to be an everyday hero by an ABC television affiliate network here in Denver. Mm. So, you know, they're very substantial people that you just don't want to ridicule these people.
Well, at least you're saying he's somewhat coming forward, although...
Yeah, he's happy. He gave a public lecture on this, and I've got him on the front page, and he'll do interviews about it. He doesn't want to be ridiculed, actually, but, you know, if it's like opening up a big can of worms for him. But he offered to be interviewed just to see how it goes.
Okay, now what is your take on Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project? Larry and Jeff, both of either or.
Well, Stephen has done some useful work. He's very articulate in what he does. Sometimes he makes mistakes, but that's allowed in this big wide open field, you see. I'd say that 90% of what he does is very useful and should be a part of the historical record for historians to realize that he was ahead of his time, just as Mr. Peckman is ahead of his time a little bit there in Denver.
And you're ahead of both of our times, even in your eternal youthfulness.
So, how are you getting? Are you getting any background? What is the term I want? Backing from the people that are part of the investigative arena in UFOs, like some of the famous names. Are they backing this initiative?
Yes, and that's just starting. For example, Dr. Stephen Greer has offered all of the people of the witnesses to be even irregular members on the commission. It means we can draw on their expertise when needed, even though they're not part of the regular commission. There's no limit on the number of those people. There's a few others I can't say just yet, but one I'm supposed to call tomorrow. Other people are working on other endorsements from some of these people. And I do use a lot of Dr. Greer's, a lot of the whistleblower testimony excerpts from those transcripts in this newspaper just to show people the full range of some of these whistleblowers that are talking about that. Robert Salas, who was at Malmstrom Air Force Base and saw the craft, or was there when the craft came and then the nukes went into a no-go status. He emailed his congratulations to the, as getting on the ballot in this last spring. He offered to help out in some way, but he and Robert Hastings were already making progress towards having this national press conference at the National Press Club next Monday, the 27th. And so even I think from my advice, I said, well, you know, let's just, you might want to just make that very clean separation and not get involved in the ballot initiative at this time because that's more of a political nature and you're on a very specific mission. And they seem to agree. And so there's moral support there, no direct involvement. But I think I'll be able to announce sometime soon more endorsements from very high-profile people that have advocated for disclosure or been involved in some way. Jaime Masson down in Mexico City, very well-known ufologist there and probably one of the most successful mainstream news media reporters that does stories on this, he's very strongly backing this ballot initiative, and his show now has kind of been elevated to a level where now there's millions of people that can view his show, and he's going to air an interview that we did in the spring. He's going to, in late spring, he's going to air that on October 2nd at about 11 o'clock at night, immediately following the big soccer game. And you know, soccer is a big deal in the Spanish-speaking countries.
So he's got a good good placement there.
Yeah, and so he said he would encourage all the people viewing the interview, that were watching the interview, he would encourage them, if they have friends and relatives in Denver, to encourage them to vote yes on Initiative 300.
What events can we look forward to in regard to you promoting the passage of this commission?
Well, I'll be showing up at Denver League of Women Voters have already created a summary, and probably by the end of tomorrow I will have that summary of pro and con statements and a summary of the provisions of the initiative. I'll have that at extracampaign.org. They have one event on ballot initiatives that will just be distributing information from a table. I will actually be participating in a debate on Initiative 300. That's still getting finalized, but it should be October 13th at the Auraria campus downtown. It's an all-day event, and I don't know exactly when I'll be talking. And there could be other things that come up. We're not, the campaign itself is not organizing any events, but rather showing up at other events.
Do you really think that this has a good chance?
Oh, yes, especially now that Veronica Barella and the Latino community are coming on board. I mean, that there's about a 35 to 37% of the Denver voters are Latino. So that's a huge chunk right there.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming on the program and getting this subject out in the to my audience. And I hope that there's people here that are listening that may, you know, want to participate or maybe do something here in our area to get that proclamation that Larry was talking about. Or, there's a whole lot of avenues that this could go, but in the past, I don't know if I would have been so quick to consider it, but I think it is time. I think it's time that we start for numerous reasons. And any closing comments from you, and give us your websites again.
Larry, go ahead.
Well, thank you for having me. Maybe a month from now you might want to have Jeffrey back, because he's a dynamo on this project, and developments are occurring practically every day. So you might want to have Jeff back next month, around the 20th of October, and see if he's holding up under all the pressure.
We'll just have to do that. I'll have to.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome.
Well, I wish you the very best on this ballot, and I'm glad it's getting out, and it is time. And gentlemen, I want to thank you for answering our questions and being here for this interview.
And Jeff?
Well, thank you. I appreciate being on. And extracampaign.org is where people can go to read this. If they don't do anything else, read this 8-page document that we've created. Nothing like it has ever been in any other election.
Again, I want to...
Good luck.
And again, I want to thank you all and say good night.
Good night to all of you, and thank you again.
Okay.
Good night to all of you.
Good night.
Good night.
And thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Truth Quest with Melody, and this is KHENLP-FM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. You were just listening to Jeff Peckman and Larry Bryant, who have... Jeff has introduced an initiative 300 to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission in Denver, and we kind of explored some of the aspects of why it might be a feasible thing to do at this point in time.